Om Gyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
When studying Bhagavad Gita, it's always helpful to remember the context in which it is spoken. The immediate context is that of Arjuna questioning Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the crucial question is that which is of the essence of philosophy: what is right and what is wrong? This question is being asked today. It will be asked in future, in various times and places and circumstances. The particular context in which Arjuna is asking, he's asking as a member of the Vedic culture, in which many pious activities are recommended. So generally in the Vedic culture, it's considered proper to perform pious activities, such as those mentioned in this verse: studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, performing ascesis, austerities, giving charity. These are all pious activities. Now the great question: what is my duty? What is the proper thing to do? This question Arjuna was asking. In the Vedic culture, you may get many answers to that question. For even within the Vedic culture, there are many different outlooks or viewpoints. There are different philosophers who profess to follow the Vedas. Therefore, we have, apart from Vaishnavas and Mayavadis, we also have followers of Sankhya philosophy, followers of the yoga system of Patanjali, and so on. And in modern humanistic society, also the question comes up, which is right and which is wrong? And the answer is attempted to be attained by appealing to what they consider to be axiomatic principles. So someone may be taken to court and he has to accept the ruling of the judge, which is based on man-made law. However, in the Vedic culture, everything is based on Vedic knowledge. Now, to solve the question what is right and what is wrong is extremely difficult and complex. As long as one is on the material platform. This was practically the subject of Vidyapurna Maharaj's class this morning. What should be done and what should not be done? What should not be done? Yeah. So what is the answer? What is the standard? That's why Arjuna's apparently simple question led to the expounding of the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, Arjuna was in what might consider to be a very crucial, intense situation. But any time the question comes up, what is right and what is wrong, it can lead us into a great philosophical discussion. We know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his childhood was sitting on some dirty pots. Cooking pots. His mother said, why are you doing that? You shouldn't do that. In other words, she was saying, what you are doing is wrong. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu argued with her. What do you mean it's wrong? So it led to some philosophical discussion based on Vedic understanding. So practically at every moment, even from childhood, the question comes, what is right and what is wrong? What should be done and what should not be done? Now mostly in the Vedic literatures, they tell what is right and what is wrong based on the materialistic understanding. According to material understanding, one should gurunna hatvahi mahanubhava, and one should not kill gurus, elderly persons. One should act to protect women and children. These are practically inviolable principles on the material platform. But in this extraordinary situation, the judgment from the spiritual platform is that even such rules may be overturned. Krishna was asking Arjuna to do something which was unthinkable, unimaginable. Arjuna had been preparing for the fight, he was ready for the fight, and he knew that due to circumstances, Drona and Bhishma, who he considered his worshipable superiors, he would be fighting against them. It wasn't that he was new to fighting, he had already killed many people. That is the fighter's duty. He had single-handedly killed in battle on his father Indra's order the Nivata Kavachas, the 60,000 demons. 60,000. So it's not an easy thing to do or a nice thing to do. Arjuna's duty to do it. He wasn't afraid of doing that. But he was afraid of the sinful reactions of killing wrongly. In modern society, it's generally considered that killing is always wrong. This is one of the points which many people in the modern age find difficult to accept in Krishna conscious philosophy, that we say that under certain circumstances, killing of humans is not only not wrong, but should be done. It is right. Following Manu Samhita, the Krishna consciousness movement advocates capital punishment. On the understanding that someone who has committed the sin of murder, that sin, the sinful reactions for that can be requited by his being subjected to capital punishment. So this kind of thing often makes people feel very uneasy and nervous, because it is often seen in the modern world that religious fanaticism leads people to kill others thoughtlessly. People in the modern age are very apprehensive about theocracy.
Theocracy?
Well, that means a rule, religious rule. Mm. They are very much afraid of religious fanaticism.
Oh.
And therefore they prefer to espouse what they call humanism. However, Vedic culture espouses that there is an absolute standard, and that absolute standard is given by God. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Religion means that which is given by God. But that has to be understood very carefully. As Prabhupada expounds in the purport, that Vedic culture, training as a brahmacharya, is meant for character training. And we see in the Vedic culture that there are many tremendously developed personalities, a very strong character. How, for instance, Maharaj Harishchandra, he was resolved to the truth, even at the cost of tremendous personal suffering. So that religious knowledge is very powerful. That is why it should be given to those who are of high character. Nowadays we see that people, they print so many different books and distribute them everywhere, and people read so many different books. But that is not actually the method to attain Vedic knowledge. One has to be trained, character training. And then he is allowed, he may be allowed to read certain books only under the permission of his guru. Because unless the character and the understanding is developed properly, we can read so many books, but it doesn't mean we'll understand them. Rather, we may misunderstand. Brahm pramad vipralipsa karana patav. The tendency of the conditioned soul is to make mistakes, be illusioned, have the cheating propensity, and to have imperfect senses. To make mistakes, to be an illusion, to have the cheating propensity, and to have imperfect senses. So the tendency to misunderstand is very strong, especially when we come to the Vedic knowledge, which is extremely subtle, that we're practically sure to misunderstand it unless we're properly guided. And even if we have proper guidance, we can still misunderstand, because we may have proper guidance, but our submission to that guidance may not be complete, in which case, again, we'll go off. Just like many people, out of their kindness, they come to me and ask for my blessings. But it's not only blessings, it's not just blessing. Okay, that's it. Now I'll go to sleep. Now I'm Krishna conscious. But you have to take not only blessings, you have to take instruction and guidance. And we have to do our work also. Blessings are essential. But our endeavor to sincerely follow the instructions and guidance, that is also essential. Actually, what Krishna taught in Bhagavad Gita is very simple, that we have to surrender to Him, as He's stressing in this verse, and in so many verses in Bhagavad. In this chapter, Krishna, in the second part of this chapter, Krishna has described the different processes by which the yogis leave their bodies and become liberated, which seems not to have much connection with Arjuna's situation on the battlefield. But Krishna was just going into a little detail to bring him back to the point. that yes, there are so many subtleties and so many different parts of the Vedic culture, but to a large extent, you don't even have to consider that. You just have to surrender to me, Krishna. That will be your topmost benefit. And that will be the ultimate good, because Krishna wants. Because Krishna wants it so. It may be difficult to understand. It is difficult to understand. Krishna wanted the battle. 18 Akshahinis, each one about half a crore. That's, 5 lakhs of men, and then wiped out. Krishna wanted. Difficult to understand. Doesn't seem like a very merciful God. But then the understanding is there that by his mercy, everyone who died on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained liberation. So what is right and what is wrong can be very simply summarized. Whatever Krishna wants me to do, that is right. And if Krishna doesn't want me to do it, even if others want me to do it, then it's wrong. That example Maharaj was giving this morning of Yudhishthira Maharaj, his chariot came down to the ground. That his chariot was, he was, by his greatness, his chariot would always go slightly above the ground. But after the incident in which Krishna induced him to present false evidence, his chariot came down to the ground. So generally that's understood because he presented a falsehood, therefore he lost his punya and his chariot came down. That is the karmi understanding. But if you think, if Krishna wanted him to tell, to present the falsehood, then how could it be something wrong? In other words, you're saying that Krishna induced him to do something which was intrinsically wrong. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the first to explain this, that because Yudhishthira Maharaj was reluctant to follow Krishna's order to go against his lifelong practice of being truthful, because of that, therefore his chariot had to come down. Because he had some personal consideration, his reputation, his honesty, his morality. But on the spiritual platform, a devotee's morality is that whatever Krishna wants me to do, I should do, even if it goes against worldly morality. Admittedly, this is a potentially dangerous mode of preaching. We find that every time a Muslim leader wants to fight a battle, he declares jihad, means holy war. It can be misused. That's why here the emphasis is on character training. A devotee is by nature the most moral person. Krishna says, sarvadhaman parityaja, give up all varieties of worldly religion. Of course, this word dharma is usually translated as religion, although it can also be, it can't very well be defined in Western languages. It can also be defined as intrinsic moral duty. Maybe a closer translation of dharma is religious morality, righteousness, doing that which is right according to religious principles. That's why even though in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says to give up all religious principles, we still find that the followers of Bhagavad Gita, they are dedicated to dharma. Often Christian missionaries in India, they protest, or the Bhagavad Gita, you see, it's teaching to fight and kill, this is not good. But practically speaking, we don't find that the followers of Bhagavad Gita are going around just killing people indiscriminately. Practically, they have been tolerant to a fault. Even that means even maybe too much so, even for their own good. We don't know of any cases of people citing Bhagavad Gita and using that as an excuse to go and kill people. Rather, the followers of Bhagavad Gita are traditionally so non-violent, they don't like to kill even animals. And what to speak of other practices? There's no such, in Vedic culture, there's no such thing, for instance, as divorce. Atithi bho devaha, and a guest is treated like a god. It's very high culture, very moral culture. But above and beyond it all is surrender to Krishna. The various subtleties and depths of Vedic culture, they all come together in surrendering to Krishna, which may if necessary, go, the surrender to Krishna may sometimes go against worldly norms. But generally, the devotees, they are the most moral persons, even by worldly standards. At the same time, a devotee is not attached to worldly morality. Now, different kinds of people are not attached to worldly morality. Just like there's that word in the Atmarama verse, Nigrantha. Atmaramas chamuniyo. Then the next word?
Следующее слово.
Nigrantha. Nigrantha. What does that mean? It means no book. Grantha means book. No book. So there are different kinds of munis who are... That means they're disassociated from books. So one kind of Nigrantha means a person who has transcended all the ordinary worldly books of morals and laws and customs. He's a transcendental Paramahamsa. He doesn't need books to guide him on the path of worldly principles. Now, another kind of Nigrantha or bookless person is a rascal. So, he doesn't follow worldly morality. Not that he's elevated beyond it, but he's below it. He doesn't care for it at all. He's a rascal. So the Paramahamsa is above the worldly principles, and the Nikodai is below the worldly principles. So when it's said that a devotee is beyond worldly morality, that means a devotee who's actually transcended the worldly rules and regulations. But if he's not even if he's not fixed on the transcendental platform, but he takes that as an excuse not to follow the rules and regulations, then he becomes below the rule. He becomes simply a rascal. Then he becomes degraded. And it's very dangerous because that precedent is there. There are so many so-called Vaishnavas who have said that, yes, we are Vaishnavas, we can dance with beautiful young women just like Krishna. This is spiritual. It's not spiritual. They're simply expressing their mundane lust and using Krishna as an excuse. So the point here that character training has to be there. One has to be of spotless character and come to the transcendental platform. It is not a platform to be artificially imitated. Imitation is extremely dangerous. So Krishna consciousness transcends all ordinary Vedic paths. We are extremely fortunate to have this opportunity to take part in the Sankirtan movement because we don't have any hope by following the Vedic path. We wouldn't even be allowed on the Vedic path. We are incapable of following all these things. But by chanting, that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's special benediction, by following the path of Bhakti Yoga, chanting the holy names, we go beyond the ordinary Vedic practices. We should approach Krishna consciousness very carefully, very seriously, take proper guidance, as Arjuna is taking guidance from Krishna. It's often confusing to know exactly what we should do. It's a very bewildering world that we live in. But if we get proper guidance and we're sincere to follow the path of Bhakti Yoga, we can come to the highest platform and go to the highest platform. Oh, Paramsthanam, supreme abode. Back home, back to Godhead, to the Loka Vrindavan. That is the message of Bhagavad Gita. Don't get entangled on this material platform. Krishna was telling Arjuna, don't get entangled on the platform of mundane piety. For us, there's no question of getting entangled on the question of mundane piety. There's either we practice Krishna consciousness or we're totally entangled in mundane impiety. We didn't have such an elevated fall-down possibility as Arjuna. For us, it's either go back to Godhead or become a cat and a dog. So let's not be in any illusion about this. We're here discussing so many fine points of Vedic culture. But practically, we are from an extremely uncultured background. By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we are now having the opportunity to discuss these things. It is a great legacy, great opportunity. So let us take advantage of that. Practice this Krishna consciousness. It's also so wonderful, you see, so, I mean, these books are being distributed. I mean, we've said all these things many times, but it's still amazing. Just like you'll find in the Bhagavatam that Shukadev Goswami, from time to time, he's making some comments. Aho bhagyam, aho bhagyam, nanda gopa vajokasam, yannitram paramanandam, purnam brahma sanatanam. How fortunate is Nanda Maharaj and the inhabitants of Vrajabhumi. that the Supreme Blissful Personality, Absolute Truth, has become their very great well-wisher and personal friend. So he's expressing how wonderful, how fortunate. He doesn't say once, but he says repeatedly. Because even though he's considering the same thing again and again and again and again, it seems wonderful. So we're considering, and we're saying about book distribution, again and again, we're considering how wonderful it is that these books are being distributed. That this such elevated knowledge is being passed out to people of such degraded background. So we're extremely fortunate to be involved in this Sankirtan movement. Here it's mentioned, Vedeshu Yagyeshu Tapasu Chaiva Daneshu Yat Punya Phalang Padishta. It's mentioned study of the Vedas. So studying the Vedas means studying Bhagavad Gita as it is, giving these books out. And then yagya, performing Sankirtan yagya, chanting the holy names, distributing these books. Tapasya, austerity, going out and distributing these books. And dana, charity, the best charity is to give people these books. So it's very wonderful how this Sankirtan yagya is going on in this degraded Kali Yuga. Practically, it's really Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. That society is degrading continuously at a very deep gradient. But still, however degraded people become, still at any time, by getting books, by getting prasadam, people's whole consciousness can change and they can become devotees. So all of us who have taken up devotional service should not disappoint people who are getting these books. When they read about these books, when they read in these books, people feel inspired. Oh, such a wonderful high standard of life. So when they come to see devotees, they expect to see that people are living such a wonderful life at this very high standard. So when they come to see devotees, they want to see that they're actually elevated people as described in these shastras. If they come and they see the devotees, then in many ways their consciousness is like that of ordinary materialistic people, then they'll be disappointed. And then they'll think, oh, Krishna consciousness is just like any other religion. They talk in their books, they have very nice things, but in practical life, it's just a show. So let us not disappoint them. Otherwise, people in this world are hopeless. How many people in Moscow end their day simply by drinking? It means that they're feeling hopelessness. The culmination of all their activities is simply to get drunk. That's all. People are feeling hopelessness. When they get these books, if they have a little spark of elevated consciousness, they can understand there is hope. So let us give them hope. Karma sthapam hetu shadu vavaha. Religion is established in this world by the behavior of devotees. Let us be devotees. At least practice seriously. Let us be enlivened by this Krishna consciousness. Let us go deeply into that. Not that simply, well, Krishna consciousness is my religion. You see, I have my home, my job, my family, my TV, my dog, my cat, and my religion. That is not the meaning of dharma. Dharma means that which totally permeates our life. And the param dharma, the topmost dharma, that is, what is that? Savai pung sang paro dharmo. Who can say the verse? Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhokshaje. So the supreme dharma is that of unmotivated devotional service unto the transcendental Lord. So Krishna is not satisfied by half-hearted religion, and we also are not satisfied. Yayatma supersedati. If it is a pratihata all the time, simply thinking how to serve Krishna, he will be satisfied, we will be satisfied. Krishna consciousness means all, giving everything. Giving everything, our time, our money, our life, our thoughts, our hopes. Of course, not everyone may be able to come to that situation immediately. And we encourage everyone, whatever situation you are in, you take up Krishna consciousness gradually. But actually the goal is just complete immersion. So at least those who are living in the ashram, they should have no other thought. only how to serve Guru and Krishna. I was being asked to give a brahmachari class, so this is now the brahmachari class. Brahmachari class means just forget everything else and serve Guru and Krishna, that's all. If you want to get married, put it off till later. You can go on putting it off till later. And that way it'll never happen. But even if it does happen, now you're in the brahmachari ashram, so you have to act as a brahmachari. Very good opportunity to be fully absorbed in activities of Krishna consciousness. So please take it seriously. You have, at least here in Moscow, there's good facility. It means physically it may be a little sankirna. What's the word? Small. Cramped. But spiritually there's good energy. So take advantage of that. Hare Krishna. I'll leave a little time for questions. Some questions being passed up. Well, yeah, okay. Krishna Chandra, I know who you are. So.
She said we were not even allowed for Vedic, for Vedic culture. Because of our simple background. But at the same time, we know that in order to practice nicely, we should follow at least some basic rules of Vedic culture. So how to define this minimum we should follow, and is there any book or manual where is this minimum described? What do you suggest?
The answer to this is that don't ask me to come to Russia. I'm writing a book on this. It's been almost ready for the last few years. If everyone stops asking me to come to different places, I'll finish it off, and then you'll have a book. And then it has to be translated into Russian. Or you can translate it into Russian. I have been compiling for many years a very detailed compendium on Vaishnava behavior with more than 100 chapters written so far.
So
it's been almost finished for the last few years, but I'm also finishing other books. When I get back to India in October, I just want to hide away and finish off the last few chapters. Then it will have to be edited and proofread, which will take probably another year or more. But I've already started, different devotees have asked me for different chapters on different topics, and different temples have started using that. Yeah, there's a question there. Will the mic go that far? It makes it easier if you can speak it into the mic.
You can pass it over there.
Otherwise, it's better if the.
Shri Prabhupada said that purity is the force. What do you recommend for nearby devotees to want to distribute books? For young devotees who want to keep the house, they have neither purity nor force.
Take training from older devotees. That is the advice.
What?
In all aspects of devotional life. Prabhupada said purity is the force. He also said utility is the principle. You're not going to distribute books just by standing on the street and being pure, chanting your rounds and holding up the book. Just like Arjuna, he demonstrated his purity by fighting for Krishna. He demonstrated his purity by, on Krishna's order, killing Karna, who was in an indefensible situation. He was not in a situation when he wasn't able to defend himself. That was Arjuna's purity. When distributing books, for instance, you may walk into an office and all the secretaries will say, "Stop, stop," and you don't stop. You walk right through and go right up to the manager and walk in his office. That may be your purity in that situation. Is the mic going to reach there? No? In that case, maybe others, if you could write it down, that's better. That would save time then instead of... You can just say that.
By the nature of time, you have to avoid devotees to go beyond all Vedic principles of subtleties and very culture. But the chanting of the holy name, while chanting the holy name, one has to purify his chanting to get rid of anathas and offenses to the holy name, which also includes development of culture. One includes that one has to become highly cultured.
Yeah, do you want to say that? Yes, chanting in itself is purifying, but proper behavior also needs to be adopted. If one is very properly behaved according to the standards of Vedic culture, but is not a devotee, his position is not as good as someone who's chanting Hare Krishna, but is not trained in proper behavior according to Vedic culture. Or even if one is nicely following the Vedic culture, but he's not a devotee, it's all useless. As is also another verse from the second chapter of the first canto of Bhagavatam states this, which those of you who know can say that verse. Those who follow the Vedic culture but are not devotees, their endeavors are all useless. You got the last line? No. Start from the beginning. Dharma, svanushtita. You're too slow. Vishvaksena katasu yaha not padyad yadi ratim. If by performing your religious activities we don't have a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna, then it's simply hard work and nothing more. So what should we do now? We should stop for the RT, or what's the usual procedure? So what's the popular consensus? Should we have kirtan or more discussion? Kirtan. Okay. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Oh, I have to distribute this person.